Hello, it is September 27th, 2016. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 614 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports and Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach. I think you're spending part of your day with me. We are back with Allison. Hello, Allison.
Hi, Will.
National correspondent for MLB.com at Allison Footer, Alyson Footer. Obviously, you know who she is. We are excited. We're getting to the end of the baseball season. We are going to be doing our big series previews on the podcast like we did last year. They're shorter, but they're concise and full of nothing but dead-on, 100% accurate prediction goodness. But I do feel like, and we have much to talk about. I want to talk about your week, for crying out loud, but because you did something very interesting. But I think, you know, we'd be remiss to not, of course, start off the show talking about the death of Jose Fernandez. I'm curious, the way it went down, and when everyone sort of found out about it, it really became that everyone just kind of, to their growing horror, kind of slowly woke up to on Sunday morning. And I saw all the people. It's kind of strange that we do this kind of collective mourning and understanding on social media now, but we kind of do. And to watch people, the waves of people kind of wake up and realize what had happened. It's hard. You know, I've written about Oscar Tavares, and we've seen Daryl Kyle. You know, we've seen some players, Tim Cruz, Bobby Ojeda back in the day. This, I can't think of both short term and long term, anything that was more of a shocking, tragic ending than this one.
Yeah, no, I can't either. And I don't want to say like, well, I don't know. Daryl Kyle's was pretty, that was pretty
They're
tragic.
Terrible. They're all terrible. They're all terrible. Yeah. But yeah, this one feels like not only terrible, but just a something beautiful that was just extinguished.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about this kid who embodied like basically everything about Major League Baseball, the American dream, overcoming things that we couldn't even wrap our minds around what he had to go through to get here, and to get where he is. And the things that he saw and did and had to go through as a teenager. I remember being kind of in a group setting at spring training, interviewing him. He was talking about the spring training series in Cuba, possible, you know, better relations between the United States and Cuba. I'm just so struck. I was so struck by so many things about him and things that everybody experienced, you know, when they meet him, when they talk to him. First of all, that he could master the English language, you know, learning it like as a teenager and early guy in his early 20s. It was amazing just to listen to him talk. And you know, you see it, the relationship we had with his grandmother, how close he is with his mother, the things that they went through, and the fact that he was just this enormous talent who was loved by everybody and had so much untapped potential. And I mean, you hear these sort of, I don't know, cliches or platitudes or whatever the word is, but you're looking at him, you're like, there's no possible way this just happened. Like, there's no way. We need, you know, people are saying we need more of these players. We need more of these kinds of people. And the fact that he, you know, Pedro Gomez on ESPN brought up a good point. I mean, it's not, I mean, Cuban players, they're heroes to their country, no matter who they're playing for. But the fact Jose Fernandez was playing for the Marlins. So he was right there. In the middle of Miami, it's just, you know, it just hits people so hard, and it is just so tragic. And his girlfriend is pregnant, and he just posted a picture of her with her little baby bump. And, you know, I just rewatched the video where the Marlins set up where they brought his grandmother to Miami and surprised him. And I just watched it again. And, you know, your heart just breaks for the family members. I just can't even think about how they're going to start to process this and grieve and mourn and try to get past this. It's just terrible for everybody.
Yeah, and these things are always weird too, because I always feel, you know, it's funny. Yesterday, not only Jose Fernandez died, but Arnold Palmer died. And right. I write about sports. I write about a lot of different things, but obviously I write about sports on a daily basis. And I have a really hard time writing obits. Mike Lupica took care of the Jose Fernandez obit for us. I'm sure he's got an Arnold Palmer incoming. I'm sure he's covered like 8 Masters or something. So, and I find that a relief that he's doing that. So, because I have to say, I have a really hard time writing obits about sports figures. And I think one of the main reasons for that is, A, I'm maybe just not that talented. But also that there seems like, it feels like it almost cheapens it when I talk about my experience. Like when I talk about like what Jose Fernandez looked like to pitch and how exciting he was to watch and how he had all of this untapped potential and how kind of amazing it was to watch him and how he was a perfect fit in that community and was an inspiration to so many people. All of it, it's hard because like if it feels like when athletes play, inevitably they get an obit because they retire at like an age that is younger than you and I. So therefore, right. we have this thing where we actually do get to say goodbye to them, and we get to do the things that are traditional obit in other fields that are actually about their career. We put them in context, and we talk about what they're appreciated. And so it feels like I like writing those. Those are fun, but like it feels like when you're writing about the actual death of someone, it feels like there's no way that I'm just talking about it as just one of the 50,000 yokels sitting in the stands watching them like everybody else. It feels almost intrusive. Sometimes to yeah. write an obit about someone when my only real interaction with him, you've at least interviewed him. I never interviewed him. So, you know, my only real interaction with him is just this enjoyment. Like for me, like, yes, I'm really sad. It's really sad this happened. And it's sad because obviously I'm sad for the family and I'm sad for his friends. But I'm also, frankly, sad as a baseball fan. Like, this is a terrific player who stood for so much stuff that we want baseball to be moving toward, and had this exuberance, enjoy of the game. And by the way, I hope everyone that's saying how great his love, exuberance, and joy of the game is, I hope those people will stop throwing at people for showing that same level of exuberance and joy of the game. I want them to be consistent about that, because that is – but all of that feels so – just like, great, good for you, 40-year-old dude in Georgia. You got a little bit more enjoyment while watching a Marlins games, and now it's not there anymore. And it always feels like I'm cheapening it, because at the life of any athlete that dies in this age is all, by definition, at a shockingly young age. That, I don't know, I just really have a hard time. Obviously, everybody has a hard time with death, but I can't. Even with, like, I wrote about Oscar Tavares the day that he died. I was at the World Series. I was at the World Series 2 years ago. And I wrote about when that happened, but I could only relate it through myself. And as I was a big Oscar Tavares fan. And at the piece, I was like, wow, that really struck how we were feeling at the time. But I go back and I read it now, and I'm like, you know what? That was none of my goddamn business. That was for his family. That was for him. And so I have such a hard time, because particularly now we do all of this mourning in public. We do all of this mourning over social media. I had a really hard time, because this strikes me, it seems like maybe the most horrible thing I've seen in baseball. Like, it's really like, just regardless of just how bad it is for the game, it's just horrible, man. Like right. that Instagram picture is just, it just kills you. And what he meant to so many people, it almost feels like diminishing just to talk about baseball, which is, of course, the only way that I really knew it.
Yeah. And the only, and really the way that I totally understand that. And I put, you know, that, I mean, you and I have had conversations, and you understand where I put sports in the perspective of mm-hmm. life in general and real life. And I, you know, it's low on my priority list as much as I love making a living doing what I'm doing. But the, I cannot get over his grandmother.
I know. It's tough, yeah. man. It's just tough. So we're a sports podcast. We're talking about baseball, and we wouldn't be. I'll put it this way. I find the only healthy response, the only sane response to this, as a stranger that did not know Jose Fernandez and is simply just moved by the sadness of what you see his family going through.
Right.
To me, I find that moving, but it also doesn't feel like my business. It doesn't, you know, and so therefore I have a really hard time with stuff like this, because I find myself almost feeling like the respectful thing is to let them mourn and let them do their private mourning. And then in like 5 years, we can all have a holy, how can you imagine what Jose Fernandez would be doing right now?
Well, think about it.
It's the only context we know him.
If you think about what happens, like, as soon as the news breaks that he was killed in a boating accident, the Marlins have to have a press conference. Yeah, now they have to have Don Mattingly up there. Like, this isn't the same as what happens when we lose a family member who's not a professional athlete. Like, there has to be a press conference, and you have to ask these awful questions, and they have to make these terrible statements. And it's just, it's not, it's like when Daryl Kyle died. It's like, what? Like, what? You know, Walt Jocketty's up there giving a press conference of a player who died in the same hotel that we've all stayed in a million times. And like, this, it's incomprehensible, but it's not a person so much that died. It's a baseball player that died. And it changes like the entire tenor of everything. And so we can't really process it, because we do like spend so much time like reading about these people, watching these people, some of us interviewing them, being around them every day. And then when something happens like this, like I'm watching Don Mattingly, I'm like, I'm so sorry that I'm actually watching this right
Right,
now.
right.
Just
I feel the exact
felt
same way. I feel the
terrible.
exact same way. And I mean, you know, we're journalists. Like, we're not supposed to feel this way. Like, I remember when I was in college, one of the main things that they told you had to do to be a real journalist is you had to call someone for a quote about a loved one who had just died. That's what they always told you. Like, if you can do that, you can ask any question of anyone at any time. And I did it. And I've never done it again, and I never want to do it again. And so maybe that makes me a bad journalist, but I have a hard time, you know. It's just every discussion of it, someone that did not know him, and I'm just saddened, and in the context of this artificial construct called baseball, which I love and you love, but we all care about. It just, I don't know. It still feels corrosive. But to be fair, like, the players don't feel that way, and the people involved in the game, I'm sure the family's probably taking some solace from this shocking this ongoing unbelievable amount of support and sadness that you've seen. Everyone was devastated by this across the board. It was just horrible.
Yeah.
So yeah. let's move on from the horror the only way that we can, by talking about Tim Tebow. So I have to say, that might be the most awkward transition in the history of podcasts.
This week has been a range of emotions.
It really has, right? So you,
I was at my
go.
I was at my dad's last night, and we had gotten back from like a big family dinner, and I was watching Pedro Gomez on ESPN, and he's standing in, you know, Little Havana, and he's talking about this completely devastating thing that happened, and I said to my dad, you know, he's like, who is that? And I was explaining who Pedro is. I said, we were just 4 days earlier, like, we were in Port St. Lucie, like, laughing with each other amongst ourselves, like, that we were there covering this very, very, you know, very real sports story, but extremely silly thing, that we were standing at the Mets spring training site 2 weeks before the playoffs start, and it's boiling, and we're all drenched in sweat watching, like, a football player playing baseball. And I thought, this is, like, this has been the week that we've had. And all of a sudden, I'm, like, watching, you know, something way more important. But, yes, my week did start off covering Tim Tebow in Port St. Lucie. I don't know why I'm laughing.
It takes all. It's a life's rich pageant, Allison. It's all sorts of crazy things that happen. So I want to know how the week was. There, certainly, I mean, let's just be as clear as possible. Tim Tebow is not an actual baseball prospect. Like, he's
correct.
Not an actual baseball prospect. He's not actually. If he makes the major leagues, it will be in a freak show aspect to just to sell tickets. And I don't. For the record, I don't want that to sound like I think he's doing something wrong by doing this. Like, more power to him. But, like, let's not kid ourselves. This guy is not actually, like, a major league baseball player. So I'm curious what. So by definition. You know, I did a cover story for New York Magazine when Tim Tebow came to the Jets, and mm-hmm. when Mark Sanchez and Tim Tebow were vying it out for that for the starting quarterback job. And in retrospect, boy, that changed football history. Whoever won that job. But I spent a week up at Jets training camp in Hempstead, New York, and it was such a circus. I was there. I actually saw, you know, that famous photo of Tebow running in the rain shirtless. I literally watched that happen in real time. I actually watched it happening because I was there. I was also running out of the rain. So, like, I've seen all the insanity that this otherwise seemingly kind of modest and normal guy inspires in people. What was it like being there for the week?
So I want to say that, first of all, being a non-football watcher, and, you know, I'd obviously, like, knew, mildly followed what Tebow's college career, and then, you know, basically became disinterested. So I really had no, like, preconceived notions about the guy. He is an extremely nice person.
Yeah, I've been with him too. I found the exact same thing.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of hate out there for Tim Tebow, and I get, you know, he's kind of controversial, and he's very religious, and, like, he, you know, melded the two together, but, like, from just being around, he, like, totally got it, he totally understood. There were 70 media members there the first day, there were 650 fans, and he totally knew that was coming, and I found him to be very pleasant. I think he's an easy guy to root for. I was watching. Now, this is just a workout. So the games are actually starting this upcoming week. So that would be a better, like, way to assert, like, actually, like, how much baseball talent he has. He very much looks like a football player in a baseball uniform. And when he takes batting practice and he's hitting batting practice pitches, he looks really good. He does make really good contact. He's really strong. And he has a really good swing. He's left-handed, so those are good swings anyway. And this means absolutely nothing. This, of equates to zero. Because and I was kind of watching him in the outfield and sort of shagging fly balls, and he, you know, did not impress me too much. But it wasn't like I was watching him run or like I had a stopwatch. And so I didn't get like a grand sense of what he could do. But no, I you know, I do not feel that he has any chance. He has no chance to get to the big leagues. If he gets to double A, I would be very surprised. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, toil around single A, maybe low A and high A for a little bit. But, you know, he was absolutely 100% locked in. He did not get any special treatment. He didn't want any. He went through the drills. He was with guys 10 years younger than him. And then at the very, very end, he signed a lot of autographs. And then he did the interviews he needed to do. It was extremely well run on the Mets' part and on his part. I enjoyed covering it because I like these off the wall, kooky, fascinating things that have nothing to do with, like, you know, Cy Young winners and strained hamstrings and all the stuff that we have to deal with in the major leagues. And I found it very entertaining, and I learned something from the whole thing. And he's very serious about this. He is serious about becoming a baseball player, even though it was a little bit of a circus act around him with all of the, you know, it's instructional league and there's 650 fans like yelling his name. And it was just like, it was just very strange, the whole thing.
Yeah, it actually sounds pretty similar to what the Jets training camp would like. It's like in the way, like, the obviously the NFL and baseball are different, but it's otherwise a pretty unglamorous thing that's usually not a big deal is made out of it, and then you just drop Tebow into it. It just turns into like total madness across the board. But you're right. I have to say, I don't quite understand why everybody hates him. Okay, that's not true. I understand why everybody hates talking about Tim Tebow. I absolutely understand that. I don't understand why everybody hates him. I just don't. I don't understand why everybody hates Tim Tebow so much. He seems to be a nice enough guy who, again, I mentioned this before, but it reminds me of when Michael Jordan wanted to play football. I was actually just a little honored that this thing that I love so much, like, oh, this incredible athlete wants to do that. You're totally going to fail and be terrible at this. But
right. I think that as baseball people, like, I think that might be where the frustration comes in and where the frustration comes with the players. Because when you're watching a baseball game, it looks so easy and the pitches do not look like they're going that fast. I mean, it's everything is so much in a different perspective. And so it's hard to, I'm not insulted by the fact that he believes that he can be a baseball player. Like, you and I know that hitting a baseball is something that he's never going to be able to do in the major leagues. Right. There are guys who have a lot more baseball talent than he does that can't hit pitching in the major leagues, which is why there's only 300 and some odd guys that are ever doing it at the same time. I don't know. I mean, the other thing is, like, the things that I would hear about Tebow, like, as a college player that were, like, kind of nauseating, the way, not what he was putting out there, but the way that people were receiving it. Like, you know, this guy's going to change your life if you just talk to him for 10 minutes. He's amazing. And it's like, and he's done some fantastic things. And he has gone on, you know, his parents are missionaries in the Philippines where he was born. They do all this unbelievable work. There is no taking that away. I mean, they are on a life's mission to help a lot of underprivileged people in this world. And I give him a lot of credit for it. But I think that that's where kind of the eye rolling comes when it comes to Tim Tebow, is the levels that people would talk about him. And then when you mix in, you know, his religious feelings that not everybody embraces so much. But just as a person, I just found him to be delightful. And, he seems to be a guy that is not afraid to fail at all. Like, he seems to be somebody who does not care that there are like hundreds of thousands of people who are laughing at him right now. And so that kind of determination can get you, you know, to a certain level. But it makes me kind of sad too. And I think talked about this, but like, it makes me sad when people, like, there's clearly something that he can't let go of. And as far as being a professional athlete. And so he's doing this because he failed as an NFL player. And now he's trying to do this. And it's like, he has an amazing career ahead of him as a broadcaster. He has every element that you need to be a good broadcaster. He can do whatever he wants. And the fact that he's doing this actually makes me kind of sad that he's doing it, because I feel like there's a lot of regret that he might experience later in life that he's trying not to experience, if that makes sense.
Hey, listen, I had to deal with the fact that I wasn't going to be a Major League Baseball player too. We've all been there, pal. And though I still have hope. I've still got a chance. I still got a chance.
You know, it's, I mean, really, it's hard. I've seen like when major league players have long careers and then they retire and they can't
Oh,
really
I know, man.
deal
I
with
know,
it.
I
I
know.
mean, it's really, really hard. And so I get that he, you know, looks at football as like something that he can't really do anymore. And then he's like, well, you know, I can play baseball. And it's kind of, you know, it is a, there's a tinge of, I don't know, I'm a little embarrassed for him
I
in
get
some.
it. I get it. And but to me, that's a reason why other players shouldn't get mad. For me, other players should be like, awesome. This is going to be amazing when this guy who is a superior athlete and dedicated and ready to work his tail off to do this is still horrible at this. Like that
Yeah.
would actually make me feel kind of good actually about the whole thing. But
And wait, I want to say one more thing.
yes.
This notion that he's taking a job away or an opportunity away from another one of these guys is ridiculous. That's the thing that I think gets me more aggravated than anything. 95% of anybody who's drafted in the June draft will never reach the big leagues. All the guys that I was watching in instructional league, you know, most if not all of those guys are never going to reach the big leagues. I mean, I don't know what kind of prospects they have. Maybe there were a few in there, but he's not taking an opportunity away from somebody else. It's not, there's not a five-tool player who's going to hit 30 home runs that's like sitting at home right now because Tim Tebow took his spot on the instructional league roster. Does not work that way. Nobody's getting screwed. The end.
Yeah, isn't the idea that if you got your job taken away from you by Tim Tebow, it
Yes.
was only a matter of time?
Thing is, people are like criticizing him because he leaves on the weekends to go do his college football announcing. And I'm like, no, this is the absolute definition of don't quit your day job. Like, there
Right.
is no way that you
Right.
should ever give that up because this baseball thing
It's
is
funny.
not going to work and he needs to hold on to the announcing job.
Yeah, that's you're right. That's like, I've not actually heard it put that way, but that's exactly right.
Yes.
All right, so now there's a week left in the season, and the big races are really on the wild card realm. I think we generally know who's going to win every division now. We don't have to really break that down so much. I wrote a piece for Sports Center trying to break down what is on in store for everyone really for the last week. What's kind of what the stakes are and what's kind of required of them. Last chance prediction. We have to dig too far into it. But who's winning, in your opinion? Who are getting the two wild card spots in the American League and the National League?
Oh my goodness. All
All
right,
right.
hang on. Give me 2 seconds. I studied these for like 2.5 hours on my flights today. Okay. My head tells me that it will be Toronto and Baltimore. My heart wants Detroit in it, but my head tells me it will be Toronto and Baltimore. And then in the National League, yeah, I actually think this is going to work out to be where they are positioned right now. I think, boy. The Giants suck, man. And you know, the Cardinals don't. I don't know. I'm being wishy-washy on this. I sort of feel like it's going to be the Mets and the Cardinals.
I the thing first off, the American League, I actually really want to pick the Tigers. I actually kind of do, but I
I
feel like
really want to pick them.
but the problem is not only do they have three against Cleveland, their three
Yeah.
games at the end of the year, which I will be at the last one of, are in Atlanta, the last three games at Turner Field. And Atlanta is kind of good right now. Like
Yeah.
Atlanta is they're hitting really well. Matt Kemp is like a monster right now. So I kind of think that those are tougher games. That is not just like some easy sweep. And I think that's the worry there, particularly with kind of the emotion of the last games going on there. So that is why I also think Baltimore gets that spot as well. So I think it's Baltimore, Toronto, and the National League. It's honestly the worst of the three teams is the Mets. Like the worst of the
Yeah.
three teams is the Mets, and they're a game and a half up, and they're on the road. Everyone will be listening to this on Tuesday, so you'll know what happened on Monday night. But I still feel like the Mets may have one last collapse in them. But I don't. I'll put it this way: I don't think any of these three teams deserve a wild card spot, which means whoever comes out of the wild card game is going to be the Cubs, because that's the way baseball works. So, all right. Well, Allison, I'm glad that we got back going. We are going to do short previews of each series once we get going in there. Once we get going next week, because it is that time of the year. This is very exciting. Are you going to be going to postseason games? Do you? I mean, obviously, you'll be at the World Series. I see you there every year. But are you going to be covering some division series and championship series?
I believe right now I am Texas Division Series, and then I move over to the NLCS and then the World Series. So,
So
yeah.
Texas to St. Louis to St. Louis again. So
I mean, yeah, all roads lead to St. Louis when it comes to my wonderful life.
you're very lucky. It's a wonderful place. Anyway, so all right. Well, also the last thing I will say to finish up our podcast back is this is also also on Monday night. In addition to all of the baseball games, it is of course the big presidential debate. Are you watching? By the way, it's already over. The listeners have already heard. Know what happens.
Yeah, I'm going to actually record it because I'm working the Astros game tonight. So I'm going to record it and then I'm going to watch it with, I don't know, like my phone off.
Yes, yes. That's a smart play. I wrote a big debate preview piece for Bloomberg on Friday. And originally I was going to go, but I went to the Republican debate at the Reagan Library about a year ago now. And there is no worse place in the world to watch a debate than at a debate if you're press. Like, basically, you're in a big room of people growling about the wire. Like, you've been in rooms with journalists. That's what it is. Except imagine that, except you can't see the game. That's what it's like. That's what it's like being at a presidential debate. So I was like, screw that. So I'm in Athens. I am going to the world famous Georgia Theater tonight. They're having a big show it on the big screen. This is the closest Georgia has ever come to being a swing state. Trump is still likely to win, but it's not 100% certain. So there's a lot of excitement and interest here. So I'm going to go to the Georgia Theater and watch that debate. And the rest of you are listening to this now, but going, oh, well, everything was going so great and everything was going, it was a very fascinating debate and Clinton was doing so well. And then she coughed for a half a second and every media person said, it's falling apart, it's falling apart. She's done a terrible job. So
you're going to watch this with random people in Georgia. You are going to...
To be fair. I do think while this is not a strictly partisan event, it is the downtown music theater in a college town.
Okay.
So I would suspect, while you probably will see some Trump supporters there, I would go under the assumption, though I don't know, they're millennials. They're probably all wearing Gary Johnson hats, apparently, or Jill Stein hats. But regardless, sure, that's where I will be watching it, because they have the bars are open. And that is the only way I think anyone's going to be. It just felt wrong to watch it alone in a dark room. Or more accurately, watching alone in a dark room and experience it honestly solely through Twitter. And I did not want to do that.
No, I don't want to do that. So. But I'm like totally opposite from you. I want to be by myself because I could not even fathom. Like, I don't even know how I'm able to. I don't know if I can even stay friends like with my friends who might support somebody that I'm not supporting.
It's a weird time. It's a weird time.
Let alone sit next to some drunk 25-year-old who might like, oh, my goodness.
There has never, ever been. I want to be as clear as possible with this. There has never been a time in my entire life, ever, ever, ever. And I've been kind of an obnoxious ass before, during, and currently, including this exact moment. But I have never, had a friend tell me, oh, I'm voting for this person, and me think, oh, I think you are dumber than I did 5 minutes ago. I've just never had that thought. That thought has never once occurred to me. I'm not saying it's occurring to me now, but it's veering more in that direction
absolutely
than it ever has before. We'll put it that
way. No, I've never cared about which political party people want to be a part of. I mean, I know, you know, it's not been like this thing where you're like, wow, you're actually fitting into several categories of people I find very vile.
Yes. So we wrap up with this, according as we do with every show, the 538 2016 election forecast, earlier today, by the way,
actually,
the Nowcast, which we don't use for the purpose of this podcast, Nate Silver there, 538 gives three different models for forecasting the election. The Polls Plus forecast accounts for the status of the economy in a league average year. Average Republican against average Democrat, who would win, adds that to the polls. Then there's Polls Only, which is only polls. And then there is Nowcast, which ignores all historical data and simply looks at the exact notion of the polls right now. Earlier today, on Monday, September 26th, Donald Trump was in fact favored. I believe that was the first time that had happened in the Nowcast, only in the Nowcast, which Nate Silver himself says is not what you should look at, though he says by the end they should all be the same. So we'll see, because we're like 50 days out. So for the first time, Trump was actually leading. At the time I look at this, it's actually 50.6 for Hillary and 49.3 for Trump. But we've been using the Polls Plus forecast. So, and remember, it wasn't that long ago, Allison, that I was like, hey, it's Madison Bumgarner's batting average, or it's the Mendoza line's batting average. right now, the odds that Donald Trump will be the next leader of the free world are 46.2, which would make him the greatest hitter of all time by a factor of about 15. So it's right. Heady times, Allison.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, there was that 538 not long ago, she was at 89% chance to win. Now she's at 49.
Heady times, to say the least. All right, so the rest of you guys already know what happens. You probably spent the last 15 minutes. It's funny, I was listening to a college football podcast yesterday, and they had this long 10-minute conversation about whether or not LSU was going to fire Les Miles, which they did about 5 minutes after they finished taping. So it was fun to listen to today, being like, oh, well, that's good reasoning, guy who thought he would be fired, because he was just fired. So everyone listening right now, you guys all watched the debate. You know what happened. We don't know what happened. It's fascinating to me to see what you guys where that ends up. And you guys are like, oh, wow, we'll really nail that coughing part. All right, Allison. Next week, hopefully we can just talk about happy things and baseball. That's my
goal. Oh, I hope so, Will.
And Tim Tebow, of course, as always. All right, Allison, have a great week. We will be back next week with you to preview all of the postseason, because there are postseason games that will be happening very soon.
Okay.
All right, well, everyone, have a great week. We'll be back with Allison next week. Make sure to follow her on Twitter at @AlsonFooter. Please find us on iTunes. Give us a nice review on iTunes and subscribe. The music is by the Sundogs. Have a great week, everyone. I hope the debate, everyone survived it. And we'll be back next week with baseball postseason previews.